This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, continuing our Holiday Week series featuring some of our favorite interviews of the year. This year, John Oliver began hosting a show of political satire Sunday nights on HBO called Last Week Tonight.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, wait, you're not going to really do a comic take on the death penalty, right? It's your second episode. I haven't even decided if I like this show yet.
Oliver had been a correspondent on The Daily Show for 7.5 years and hosted the show in the summer of 2013 while Jon Stewart took a break to direct his movie. On John Oliver's HBO show, which returns February 8th, he does long kind of investigative reports on complicated issues, issues that aren't already on everyone's radar, even issues you may have thought were boring. And he makes the reports informative as well as laugh out loud funny. Here's one example from June. The subject was net neutrality, the idea that the internet should be a level playing field with all data being treated equally, whether it's coming from a big corporation or a little startup. The FCC has been considering rules that would end net neutrality and create a data fast lane for companies willing to pay a premium price. But the issue is sometimes discussed in hard-to-follow technical and bureaucratic language, which is where John Oliver comes in.
Our government looks set to end net neutrality and let these companies run hog wild, and we're just going to let them. And you know why? It all comes back to this.
It seeks comment on ways to construe additional language in Section 706 and even suggests using Section 230B to broaden the scope of the commission's usurped authority.
Oh, my God, how are you still so dull? And that's the problem. The cable companies have figured out the great truth of America. If you want to do something evil, put it inside something boring. Apple could put the entire text of Mein Kampf inside the iTunes user agreement, and you just go, agree. And that's why advocates should not be talking about protecting net neutrality. They shouldn't even use that phrase. They should call it preventing cable company because that is what it is.
John Oliver, welcome to Fresh Air. Congratulations on your new show. I really love it. Is this part of how you see your show taking things that people might dismiss as being too boring or too complicated or, you know, not relevant to their lives and showing why it's interesting, important, and how you can actually make it funny?
Maybe we've kind of been drawn to things that are not being covered, really. And net neutrality is that would be a key example, because that is the most important thing that is honestly too boring to care about. And yet it is a pivotal moment in a very, very key issue. And so, yeah, that's what we're trying to use our time on at the moment, or we have been. It's been that, or, you know, the death penalty or the Indian election. Nothing that makes you scream, oh, this is going to be inherently hilarious.
The weird thing is that I learn things from watching your show. Like, I hadn't been paying attention to the Indian elections till I saw your show, and it seemed like, well, that's really interesting. But it's embarrassing for me to admit that.
No, I can take that from people in the street, but if Terry
it's horrible.
Gross is
I know.
Saying that,
I know.
We're
awful.
In such trouble as a nation. You're the canary in the coal mine.
Well, you'll save us
all.
If
Terry Gross doesn't know about the Indian election, we're in serious trouble.
Well, thanks for embarrassing me even more than I was already embarrassed. So in introducing the net neutrality piece, you said the only two words more boring than net neutrality are featuring Sting. Mm-hmm. Do you worry that one day you will be at a party with Sting and there will be a chill in the air because you said that?
Of course, but that is the key thing. You've hit on a profound truth in comedy there, and that is that what you can never do is then be at parties that Sting would be at. And that's true of basically everyone I ever make fun of. As a comedian, you should not be in rooms where the people you're making fun of also are, because you'll realise at the end of the day, they're just people. You can't risk having that kind of compassion infect your mission to attack. So, no, yeah, so my solution to that is not to curb my jokes. It's to not put myself in the same room as the consequences of those jokes.
But that means with every year that you're doing satirical comedy, there are fewer rooms you can enter.
Yeah, but that's what you're supposed to be. A comedian is supposed to be an outsider. You're supposed to be outside looking in. I don't want to be at parties in DC with politicians. The comedian shouldn't be there. If you feel comfortable in a room like that, there's a big problem. That's what's so concerning about when you see journalists so comfortable around politicians. That's a red flag. You know, there should be a kind of awkward tension whenever a journalist walks into a room that politicians are in, because you should have done things that have annoyed them in the past. And the same as a comedian, you're no one's friend. You should be no one's friend other than other comedians.
Last summer was a big summer for you, because when Jon Stewart was in the Middle East directing his film, mm-hmm. he asked you to host for him. And you were fabulous hosting the show, and that was basically the consensus of opinion. And I just want to play a short excerpt of what I think was your first night hosting after Jon Stewart left you in that position.
Before Jon left, it was very sweet. He was very warm and supportive, and he actually gave me this little note here, and it says, "Don't worry, you'll be great." That's nice, although subjective. Besides, no big news stories ever break out over the summer.
U.S. officials acknowledge that intelligence agencies are secretly collecting millions of Americans' phone records on a daily basis.
Private calls of Americans, whether they've been suspected of a crime or not.
Are you kidding me? John's been gone one day. We had such a fun, gentle first show planned for you as well. You know, a few harmless I'm British jokes, like, this is a football, not a soccer ball. We call it a football. Halfway through the show, we were going to break and have a little tea time. And then at the end of the show, I was going to fly off at the end on with an umbrella. It was just a bit of fun. Just a bit of summer fun. And instead, Jon Stewart is barely out of the door. And it turns out that not only is the government tracking everyone's phone calls, but that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Now we're hearing it goes way beyond phone records to our internet habits and who we email with.
The National Security Agency is building this massive new data center in Utah.
This is a mammoth facility. The published reports indicate that it can hold 5 zettabytes of data.
Zettabytes? You've actually got to be careful with those. I think that's how Michael Douglas got throat cancer. Boom! Hey, he left you! John left you! I'm here!
That's John Oliver, substitute hosting for Jon Stewart when Jon Stewart was making his movie. So what kind of real advice did Jon Stewart give you before he left for the summer?
Gave me lots. He gave me lots of advice. I don't know how transferable some of it is because it's so specific. You know, it helps me every day now thinking about it, you know, running my own show. But I think there was one day, to be honest, in particular, that was very, very difficult. And it was something that I'd been concerned about going in. And I'd said to him, if something really, occasionally something, when something really painful happens, there are times when people just want to hear from John about it. And, you know, there have been times in the past when he's helped people, you know, with comedy to kind of feel some kind of catharsis through some very difficult events. And I said, I'm worried that I have no authority to occupy that position. You know, I can make fun of things, but that if anything painful happens, I'm worried that it's unearned. Any authority I have is unearned. And he'd said, well, now would be the time that you would have to earn that.
I want to play your last appearance on The Daily Show. And in this, like, Jon Stewart is setting up your piece. You're sitting at the desk with Jon Stewart, and he's setting you up to talk about the royal family.
Yeah.
So here we go.
You know, it's funny. I thought that went pretty well. Do you think that went well? That bit?
Why?
I just thought it was funny that like, did you think us discussing this was like that we got laughs?
Yeah, a few.
Right.
Well, not bad.
Do you think it's weird that we worked on this all day? This the bit we did here, like, because it's like, it's a, I don't know if you know this, but like, John Oliver, how long have you been here?
Seven and a half years.
But John, because, and we've all known this, you're a tremendously talented individual. You know that. You know we know you're tremendously talented. John,
whatever you said. Then.
John got his own show on HBO, which is long overdue, and we're very excited for him. But this is his, unfortunately, his last night with us. And I went, it's true. So I today went through this enormous, I guess your people would call it a charade, of writing this f-ing royal nut bit.
Are we not doing the bit?
No, of course we're not doing the bit. Do you think? What do you think we're doing here? No, I don't care. I don't care.
You know what?
There's only one British royal I care about tonight.
Uh-huh.
And his name is Prince John Oliver. So let me show you. Here's what I want to talk about a little bit. So you came to us from, I think you came from us, Ellsbury on Lightly. I don't remember the town you come from.
As well.
Muffin on Puffin stuff.
That's offensive, but fine.
It should be. But what I loved about what John brought to us was a broad range of characters from different backgrounds.
John Oliver, you seem to be totally thrown by the fact that this piece that you've been writing and preparing all day was a charade, and it was basically a surprise party for you.
Yeah, it was very difficult.
We could see you wiping tears from your eyes, and John, I thought John Stewart looked surprised, like he wasn't expecting you to be that emotional, and he was almost a little concerned.
I think. Well, the problem, the moment when I fell apart was that I think he could see that I was getting upset towards the end, and I don't know if you can even hear it on camera, but he brings me in. He asked me, "Are you okay?" And I just fell apart because that was just such. It was so emblematic of the way he'd been with me over nearly a decade, which was constantly checking if I was okay, helping me through things, teaching me how to do things that I perhaps should already know how to do, before he left for the summer, at a time when he had no time, when he had a movie to prepare. He was so generous with, giving me advice on how to run things, when there can be problems in the process, how to feel when something like this happens. He helped me with everything. He was always so generous. And then so at that moment, the fact he said, "Are you okay?" That was, I'm afraid, my elegantly constructed British dam was was broken.
You've done political satire in England as well as the United States. What are the first issues that you felt engaged with?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I grew up in Thatcher's Britain, so it was difficult not to have an opinion when you're growing up, especially because both of my parents were state school teachers. They taught in regular schools, what you call public schools, and so you kind of see the consequences of particularly rough policies there. And so I saw my parents kind of struggle a bit under some of what Thatcher was doing. So it's hard to grow up apathetic in that particular time. She was a pretty polarizing figure.
So how did you figure out that what the comedy you wanted to do was political satire as opposed to autobiographical stand-up comedy or, sitcom comedy?
When you first start doing stand-up, I think all you want to do is survive. You just want to leave the stage to something with something resembling the dignity that you walked onto the stage with. And then as you get better, then you start to think, well, maybe if I've got what basic performance and writing skills I have now, it would be interesting to turn that to stuff I'm actually interested in. So then, like, the comedy that you're capable of and your areas of interest, they generally collide for the first time. And so then you just try incompetently to talk, to use comedy to talk about something that you're passionate about. And that is a recipe for comprehensive failure for a while. But hopefully on the other side of that is something which is much more satisfying to do.
So you were passionate about politics?
Oh, is it? Yeah, yeah. I guess so. Yeah, I was pretty interested at the time, and it was also, you know, the run up to the Iraq War was an interesting time as well. So, yeah, I became more interested in writing, you know, comedy about current affairs.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your wife is a veteran of the Iraq War.
She is. Yeah, she is. Yeah, she was in the U.S. Army. She was a combat medic with 1st Cavalry.
So, do you share the same political point of view about the war in Iraq?
That is a very difficult question because trying to think to what extent I'm kind of licensed to talk on her behalf. She was very young when she went to war. I think she and most veterans at the moment of the Iraq War are having a very difficult time looking at what is happening in Iraq right now. No, because she and many of them, no, they spilt blood in that country. And to watch what is happening with ISIS at the moment, I think is truly heartbreaking for them. You know, it's a difficult time for Iraq War veterans, this. And America is not particularly engaged with its war or with its veterans of those wars in particular. And I think it's very easy not to think about them a lot. But to a certain extent, we live with that war. The fact she fought in that war is part of her life. You know, it's a big part of her life. She turned 21 in that war. You know, she was in Fallujah, and it's difficult. It's not these are not my stories to talk about, really.
No, that's fine. So it must be sobering when you're trying to say funny things about the war in Iraq or what's happening now in Iraq or, you know, Afghanistan or whatever. Because it's so close to home to you, you know the real, you know your wife knows the real meaning of war, that she's been through it.
Yeah,
and it must be a very sobering reminder that as funny as you want to make a sketch, that, you know, it's real.
Well, yeah, of course, but the stakes are higher. So, you know, you need to be absolutely confident the whole time of why you're telling a joke, what that joke is. Yeah, you want to keep that in mind, you know, and it is it's a more visceral reminder of that. No, I guess I went to Afghanistan this last summer with her. Just in fact, it was the day after I finished the Daily Show for the summer.
I can hardly think of a more relaxing way to wind down from hosting the Daily Show all summer.
Well, it's just I've wanted to do it for a long time because it was very hard to find the time, but I really wanted to do it because from my wife or. From friends of hers, or you know, Rob Riggle, who used to work on the Daily Show and who was a Marine, they often talked about how much it meant just to have someone, not even if it's someone you like in particular, just someone from back home coming and just trying to take you out of your own head for a few minutes. So, yeah, it's kind of comedy is a luxury at the best of times to do as a career. And it's one of the rare times you actually feel like it has some tangible use, where, you know, you look out at an audience of people that are just exhausted with guns in their laps, and you think, I will do whatever it takes to make you laugh. I even tased myself. I tased myself
no,
in the
really?
Leg. Someone had a taser, and they said, do you want to tase yourself? And I thought they'd laugh if I did. And so yeah, I tased myself in the leg, and it hurt. And the last thing I can remember, one of the other guys who I went over there with, I remember as I was jolting myself in the leg, I remember hearing him shout, I thought you were smarter than this. But I'd do anything. I'd do anything to make him laugh. You know, it's like it was a privilege to be there. But yeah, it was amazing to go. And it was so much fun.
John Oliver, it's just been wonderful to talk with you. Thanks so much, and congratulations again on your new show.
Thanks, Terry. It was a real, real pleasure.
John Oliver recorded in June. His satirical news show, Last Week Tonight, returns Sunday, February 8th on HBO. Coming up, Maureen Corrigan reviews a collection of short stories she describes as parables about the comic futility of life. This is Fresh Air.